This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James from 2023 Commodity Classic in Orlando, where we meet up with Kurt Kavarik, Clean Fuels Association, and Kansas producer Kim Baldwin. That in just a moment. First off, Alexis Taylor is Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Ag Affairs at USDA. Talks about 2022 ag trade missions.
Last year, USDA hosted 5 trade missions with 100 U.S. companies participating in over 1,300 business-to-business meetings. And what we saw is a report out of over $42 million in sales projected over the first 12-month period since the activity took place. These trade missions provide opportunities for small and mid-sized businesses, U.S. exporters, to get into markets such as the UAE, the U.K., the Philippines, Kenya and Tanzania, and Spain and Portugal last year.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Kurt Kavarik. Kurt is with the Clean Fuels Alliance America. You just kind of made the business card name a little longer, right?
That's right. We rebranded from the National Biodiesel Board almost a year ago, last January, recognizing the innovation that's taken place in our industry, the different fuels that we're producing. Clean Fuels Alliance America fits more of what we're doing more appropriately today than National Biodiesel Board did.
So I'm glad you did that. So let's just expand that a little bit further for those who might have known the National Biodiesel Board. Okay, we know it's biodiesel, but what about Clean Fuels Alliance? What's under the umbrella?
Sure. So our membership includes producers of biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel. And when our industry was created by the soybean complex 30 years ago, soybean oil was our primary and only feedstock to produce the fuel. Today it's about 50%. The other 50% is animal fats, distillers corn oil, and used cooking oil. So we've not only diversified in the fuel that our members are producing, but we've also diversified in the feedstock that we can produce it from. So ever changing and evolving and innovating to make some of the lowest carbon homegrown renewable fuels.
You mentioned the aviation fuel side. What a huge opportunity. We're hearing buzz from Ag Secretary Vilsack, from the Energy Secretary Granholm. There's a lot of interest inside the administration.
There's a lot of opportunity, and to their credit, they're looking at areas. You know, they're very focused on electrification and electric vehicles, but they recognize that there are certain types of transportation that you just can't electrify. So they're looking to airlines, ocean-going vessels, railroads to some extent, which is great for us as a distillate replacement. That's where our fuel goes, and we've been talking about that for, you know, a decade or more. That it's going to be a long time, if ever, to electrify some of the heavy-duty truck transportation, locomotion, ocean-going airlines. That's where our fuel goes. That's where it belongs.
You mentioned a decade or so. It's been well over a decade that we've been talking about the RFS, the Renewable Fuel Standard. We get volume obligations usually on an annual basis. What are we looking at now as we prepare for 23 and beyond?
Yeah, well, EPA just released in December of last year a 3-year renewable volume obligation proposal setting volumes for 2023, 24, and 25. We looked at this as a great opportunity to do as Congress intended with the law, and that was to send the market signal for growth, to require the fuel to be used so that we have the signal to continue to build out the industry. Unfortunately, that was a missed opportunity. They essentially flatlined our volumes for all 3 years. And to give you an idea of how out of touch this proposal is, our industry today is north of 3 billion gallons a year. This proposal in 2025 is below 3 billion. So all 3 years are below what our capacity and our market was last year. So you have to kind of scratch your head and say, what's the point of a program that's meant to send positive market signals to innovate in the feedstock production and the production of the fuel if the proposal is below our current market? It's disconnected from reality. And so we're working over the course of the next 3 months to put pressure on the EPA, the administration, and USDA through our champions in Congress to have a positive impact and get these numbers up.
What do producers need to know about this, and is there any work that needs to be happening back at the farm?
We're engaging right now, particularly in the House of Representatives. Representative Hinson from Iowa is circulating a letter among her colleagues to make this point to the administration, how badly they missed the mark. We anticipate there'll be additional efforts like that in the Senate, perhaps even among governors. And what I would say is, as a soybean farmer, today we're adding about just over $1 per bushel to the value of a soybean because of what we add in value to the oil. And we've seen almost 20 announcements to expand soybean crush in 10 states, an economic infusion of about $5 billion. All of that is partly due to the innovation and the desire for low-carbon fuels and the success of the renewable fuels program. So all of this could be undermined and undercut if we don't get these volumes up. That investment is not assured to happen, and it's all being put at risk because the EPA failed to recognize what's happening in the industry, both in terms of soy crush expansion and renewable fuel production.
I know it's a completely different category here, but it is somewhat related. Could we learn something from sending market signals with what happened with the price of diesel and gasoline early on in the administration?
That's absolutely right. Another reason we're so perplexed by this is if you look at what this administration desires in terms of energy production, they want U.S.-produced energy that's lower carbon, that's creating jobs, and adding value here in the United States. What's a better solution to that than domestically produced, farmer-grown, low-carbon, 75% better than petroleum that's here today and can power vehicles that can't be electrified? So that's the conversation that we're having with the leaders in Washington. I think our message is being received. We just hope that we're successful so that we can get this number up and provide this certainty and growth for the industry that they deserve.
Final one here for you. What happens if there is no change? Will we see investments start moving out? What could happen on the other side?
Well, we saw when the proposal came out in December, immediately soybean oil prices went down. The RIN value went down. It had an immediate impact on all of the signals that people read to know, should I make the investment or not make the investment? You know, I can't speak to any of the soybean crush announcements that have been made, but I have to imagine that people are kind of running the numbers again, saying to themselves, okay, if these are the volumes that are finalized, does this project still pencil out? Are we going to invest this $500 million in a soybean crush expansion? And I think that's what farmers need to understand of what's at stake here. You may say, well, I don't use biodiesel or I can't get it. The fact of the matter is there's a huge demand for the product. Farmers are a key component of providing us with that feedstock, and they benefit from it as a result through higher value for their commodity. So I'm hopeful that, you know, we can activate the farmer interest in this. I think they're well aware. The leadership surely is, and have a positive outcome with this final rule in June.
All right. We want to learn more about the Clean Fuels Alliance America. Where do we go?
Cleanfuels.org.
Great to see you, Kurt. Wish you the best. Catch up with you again soon.
Always glad to be with you, Tony.
Kurt Kovarik is with the Clean Fuels Alliance America. From Commodity Classic in Orlando, I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.
When it comes to farming in dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
United Ag is one of the largest association health plans to offer healthcare benefits for the agricultural industry. Their mission is to bring innovative healthcare solutions to agriculture by meeting their members' employee benefit needs. Join today and take advantage of the premier benefits offered by United Ag. United Ag is committed to contributing to a strong and healthy ag industry. For more information or to join, visit www.unitedag.org.
This is the Agribusiness Report, and from the 2023 Commodity Classic, ran into Kim Baldwin, who is a producer from McPherson, Kansas. So great to see you. Glad that I could say McPherson, because there is no fear in McPherson, right?
There is no fear in McPherson, Terry. So yes, great job on McPherson.
And actually, I pulled that from somebody who taught me that years ago. I wonder who that was.
Well, that would be my significant other, my husband, Adam. Yeah, he's a big proponent of making sure everybody knows that there is no fear in McPherson.
But there is sorghum, isn't there?
There's a lot of sorghum. You know, we're located in McPherson County. So if you know where I-135 runs north and south in Kansas, we're to the west of I-135. Pretty dry country out there right now. Definitely not as dry out in western Kansas, though.
So when we talk about dry conditions, really limits your opportunity for crops to grow. Is that a place where maybe sorghum really fits in?
Yes. Hard yes on that one. You know, when my in-laws first started the farm there in McPherson County in the 70s, it was 100% dry land operation. Rotation of wheat and sorghum. Really out of necessity, because we didn't have any irrigated farm ground, and they had to do with what they had at the time. But even now that we've picked up more and more irrigated acres, we still include sorghum in that rotation. You know, we've expanded from wheat and sorghum to now wheat and sorghum, plus corn and soybeans and popcorn. But it's incredibly important to continue to utilize sorghum because of all of the opportunities that we see with that crop.
Would you consider this part of the sustainability message as well?
Oh, totally. You know, sorghum is the smart choice. You know, it's a resource-conserving crop. For us, we're coming out of a very dry 2020. I mean, we're still going to see the effects of this with our wheat crop that hopefully, knock on wood, we're still going to be harvesting this June, and we're about 3 weeks out from starting to plant corn and beans and, you know, then milo and sorghum. But yes, as far as the sustainability, sorghum sustains for us. We have really, I would say, a moisture deficit for sure. And so whatever we have in the ground that we're trying to conserve to get our crops up and going, sorghum responds to what we have or what we don't have remaining in the ground.
You can grow it. You got to have a market for it. Where are we on that?
So, you know, sorghum is utilized in a lot of different areas. And one thing that I'm really thankful for is the versatility of it. You know, for us, we have ethanol plants that we can easily send our sorghum to in central Kansas. But there's some really cool emerging markets and opportunities for sorghum and sorghum producers from, you know, the pet food industry. Obviously, human food and that food industry, aquaculture. So it's not necessarily just something that you feed the hogs or the cows, you know, as part of their ration anymore. There's just a lot of opportunities, and I'm just excited that, you know, there are potential markets that are going to be including some sorghum.
All right, last one for you. This one's the toughest of all. You look in the crystal ball. Are you optimistic about what's coming down the road?
Well, we farm, so we have to be optimistic, right, Tony? Yes, I am very optimistic. You know, sorghum hits a lot of those check marks if we're talking sustainability. You know, in taking a look at how industry and customers are looking at sustainable solutions, I think sorghum can be fit into a lot of those solutions, whether it's, a sustainable beef or, you know, ethanol, whatever that is. Sorghum, just because it requires less resources, checks those boxes. And so I'm incredibly excited to see what's next for sorghum.
So good to see you. Wish you the best. Let's do this again.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Tony.
From the 2023 Commodity Classic in Orlando, I'm Tony St. James.
Life doesn't come with guarantees. But working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
Ranchers, I will see you at the 2023 Hemp Hill County Beef Cattle Conference, April 25th and 26th in Canadian, Texas, sponsored by Capital Farm Credit. Tucker Brown here of the R.A. Brown Ranch, and as a young rancher, I'm excited to hear the nationally known speakers, see the 85 trade show vendors, and eat some amazing beef. Register today online at Hemp Hill County Beef Conference website or call 806-323-9114. That's 806-323-9114.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today, Kurt Kavarik with the Clean Fuels Alliance and Kansas producer Kim Baldwin.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
When it comes to farming and dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
This is the Agribusiness Report.
The delegation is now in place for USDA's first agricultural trade mission of 2023. A March 19th through 23rd visit to Panama.
Trade missions are just one of the effective tools we have in our market development toolbox.
Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs Alexis Taylor will lead the delegation as it solicits business from buyers in Panama and the CAFTA DR, Central America and Dominican Republic region. Representatives from 26 agribusinesses and farm organizations, as well as state departments of agriculture from Idaho and Montana, will make up the U.S. delegation. A growing middle class in Panama and the CAFTA DR region is represented in increased exports of American farm and food goods to those markets, up 57% in 2022 to a record $8.8 billion. The Panama Ag Trade Mission is one of six scheduled by USDA for this year. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.